Okay, Parshas Shavua on Tuesday the 21st of December 2010, 14th of Tevet, Parshas Shemot. Okay, I wanted to cover a few themes to do with the famous episodes of the burning bush this week, and really doing it slightly differently to what way we've approached things in the past, and to brainstorm on a couple of questions, and then to actually learn through a passage from Rabbeinu Bechaya on this episode, where he has some interesting observations which I think are worth us considering. So let's just go through the Pesukim. We're just reading the first three Pesukim. I think this is Ravi in the laning. Jonathan, do you want to just read through for us?
Yeah.
In English, yeah.
Sorry?
In English, yeah. Right.
And Moshe was shepherding the flock of Yitro, his father, the old priest of Midian, and he led the flock far into the desert and came to the mountain of God in Horeb. And an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from inside a bush. So he looked and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was the bush has not been consumed. And Moshe said, I will turn it aside and I will watch this great sign. Why is the bush not burning?
Right. I've identified, I think, two key questions, but there are other questions as well. So if we're sort of brainstorming the psukim, I think the key question is, what's the symbolism of the bush and the fire, or the burning bush? And the further question is, why, particularly did it have to happen there? Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu was in Midian at the time, so why couldn't this happen in Midian? Why couldn't it be in Midian that he had this vision? Why did it have to take place Achar HaMidbar? Share with me by all means any further questions that come to mind.
I've got a couple. Why does it say in the middle that it continues to repeat that the bush was burning with fire?
Right.
And secondly, in final pasuk, Moshe turned aside, and what was it all about? And where is he turning to? And
Okay. I think the answer to that question is, I think, straightforward. What, especially if you look at Rashi, he said, "Asura navera, I will turn aside to go over there." Remember, he's in the, we always have these, I think, childhood sort of images of what it was, and bush. But probably Moshe Rabbeinu saw it from some distance, saw this fire in the desert, seemed to be very very big, and sort of watched it for a few moments. Nothing seemed to be being consumed, so he said, let me go. Perhaps the more colloquial translation of Asura Nava Ere would be, let me go and have a look at what's happening. That might be, which I think answers your question. Any other thoughts, observations?
Why was this? The first concept, it seems that he could have said Moshe was shepherding the flock of Israel. Why didn't he say his father-in-law, the priest of Midian? Why did he always mention that it was Yeshua's problem in the first place?
Right. Okay.
And it says there.
Two questions. First, I don't know much about shepherding, but the desert seems to be a strange place to take sheep. And secondly, he says he's excited by the fire, but there's an angel in the middle of the fire, which he doesn't seem to mention. It says that an angel appeared to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's remarking upon the fire, the fact that there was an angel. You'd
have
thought that would be worth remarking on as well.
Right. Okay, we'll address that somewhat in Rabbeinu Bechaya in due course. That's okay, so let's bear those questions in mind as we go through it. So the first question that I want us to look at is, why did the episode take place so far into the desert? Which links in with Ben's question of what a funny place to take the sheep in the first instance. Though, as you correctly say, we don't really know a lot about shepherding. We also don't really know that much about the desert.
It's probably not a desert in the sort of
Sahara sense. Yes, it might be more in the Lake District sense. That's
what a thing to say about the Lake District.
The desert started to form in time about 1500 years ago.
How many years ago?
About 1500 years ago. Even the time of the Maya, like, it would have been desolate, but not, it wouldn't have been a desert yet. And it wouldn't be like how we see it as there is today.
Okay, that's a very helpful observation. That's
this is Sinai, right? This is
presumably, yeah. I mean, we don't know exactly where it is. The other thing is, it's sort of, it seems to be quite a distance away from Midian. Midian is sort of to the southeast of Eilat, for want of a better focal point. Whereas, you know, obviously the Sinai Desert is further northwest. As the Mepharshim point out, Har Sinai was only 3 days away from Yerushalayim, from Mitzrayim, you know, however you're measuring that. So, you know, it was some distance away from his starting point. I want to compare and contrast a number of the Mepharshim. Let's start off with the Chizkuni. So the Chizkuni says, Achar HaMidbar, Shama Matsui Deshe Mire Behimot Harbe. I think that should have been a Harbe. So it's a, I wouldn't say a fertile area, but it's certainly an area that provides you, you know, with animal fodder, a good place to take the sheep to graze, which would support Ed's contention that it was a grazing area. So the Chizkuni is just saying that that was a convenient place to shepherd the flock. And again, I'm not like Ben, I'm not an expert in sheep shepherding, but it strikes me that probably, you know, there are two ways of shepherding sheep. Either you're a modern sheep farmer, where your sheep all go out to graze in the field behind your farmhouse. Or, I suppose, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have much else to do. I say, take your sheep from wherever he wanders, you know, and he wouldn't come back home necessarily every night, but he would probably, I'm guessing, you know, come back once a week, once, you know, every 2 weeks. You know, he'd take them away and wherever they ended up. So, the fact that they wandered somewhat distant from Midian, you know, wouldn't be a problem. And yeah, he knows over there, you know, 3 days' journey is some nice, luscious scrubland, whatever. So that's a good place to take the sheep. So that's the Chizkuni. So as far as the Chizkuni is concerned, it was it was purely practical motivation for going there. The Sforno says something totally different. He says, "Vayavoy el Har HaElohim Choreva." Hu levador, he went by himself there, presumably meaning, as a number of Farshim point out, he probably had a number of co-shepherds with him. You know, it's unlike, we don't know how large Yitro's flock was, but it's, you know, quite possible that, you know, there were a couple of other under-shepherds with him. Lehit bodeid or lehit palel. So he was going for some hispondidus. I don't know if that necessarily means in the Breslov sense, but to get away from it all, from the hustle and bustle of Midian life, whatever that was, and to Lehit Palel, to daven there. So Sforno is addressing a further question. What's the further question that Sforno is addressing? It says, he came at Har HaElokim. Right, so in what way was it Har HaElokim? And so it seems, presumably, according to Sforno, there may have been some sort of tradition that this is where this was maybe a site of Hitzbodedut, a site of religious. Well, usually we assume that the Akedah was at Har HaMoriah. There is a Tosfot in Moed Katan which suggests that actually Har HaMoriah, I think that Har HaMoriah and Har Sinai are one and the same, or that the Akedah took place on Har Sinai. Now, there is such a, so, but that's not normative, but that would work very nicely if that was the case. In any event, what was Moshe Rabbeinu doing out there in the middle of nowhere? Pause on that. He was going to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why he was going on a spiritual quest. And Rashi says, why was he going so far into the wilderness? Nitrachek min HaGezel. Famous Rashi wanted to be out of town, so that his sheep was Sheloye Rubis Tadot Achimim, so that his sheep wouldn't be grazing in anybody else's fields. That's in town, sheep, you know, will graze wherever they can get. They're going to something else. Go into a Hefka belt, and that's going to be much better. So we can, on the one hand, we could simply say that this is just okay. Machloket Mafarshim as to what, you know, why he was there. You know, was it practical purposes? Was it spiritual purposes? Or was it Litrachek Min HaGezel? I put these three ideas in this particular order because I want to suggest that we've actually got a machloket here, really, not only about what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing there, but maybe a machloket even, or they might not have seen it as such, but maybe it's reflecting different views or different possibilities as to why Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen to be Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's one of the things that's consistently missing from Tanakh. We don't know why Avraham Avinu was chosen to be Avraham Avinu. We don't know why Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen to be the leader in the sense that he was. You know, unless we use Midrashic interpretations. Maybe what we've got here is that the Chizkuni is just saying, you know, we don't know. You know, there's no hints in this parasha. The Sforno perhaps is suggesting there's no Moshe Rabbeinu was a spiritual, but he was a person who already, you know, linked in with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some way, or linked up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some way. I mean, we've already got that, you know, the Midrashic notions that the Leviim weren't enslaved, and that the Leviim still had some sense of Avodat Hashem, and
not that he'd have picked up.
Well, that's also unclear. I mean, it's when I was trying to make up my mind what to give the shir on, I wasn't sure. One of the things that I thought of giving the shir on was Moshe Rabbeinu's early life. And if we can just digress for a moment, you know, when you read the Pesukim, there are lots of unanswered questions. What's happened? He's put into the bulrushes. His sister's keeping an eye on him. But Paro comes and, you know, finds him. It seems unlikely, number one, that, you know, there's this girl hanging around. Oh, I know somebody who can look after this baby for you. A Hebrew woman comes and takes it. Does Bat Paro never put two and two together and say to herself, maybe this is the mother? How long was Moshe in Yocheved's home? If you involve Midrashim, it gets easier and more complicated. Easier in the sense that some of the questions are answered. More complicated in the sense that you have contradictions. Then, you know, there's the man, you know, Rashi says that how did Yocheved get away with concealing the baby? Because they counted 7-9 months from the time that Amram remarried her, but the baby was born after 6 months. No, they came back after 3 months, you know, and she's got a baby again. You know, everybody, you know, okay, even if nobody noticed that she was pregnant, all of a sudden she's looking after this baby. You know, it's looking rama and rama in a certain sense. So I don't know to what degree Moshe Rabbeinu was familiar with Jewish traditions or not. You know, and you half get the idea, well, this was his, you know, when he went and struck the man, you know, struck the Egyptian. Was that his first outing to see the Israelites at work? Did he know they were, it says his brothers. Did he know they were his brothers? Didn't he know, you know, what? So I don't know the answer to that question. As an aside, how old was Moshe Rabbeinu at this juncture?
Late 70s?
Yeah, 80. I mean, I guess when he went back to Mitzrayim, he was 80. How long had he spent in Midian? So we'll see you in Rabbeinu Bechai. I mentioned that he spent 40 years in Midian. So, you know, he was 40 years in Mitzrayim, 40 years in Midian, 40 years leading B'nai Israel. So, you know, that's... So what his religious identity was, having lived in Midian for 40 years... Don't know.
When did he marry?
Well, that's unclear as well. If you look at the psukim, what impression do you get? Vayeshev Beres Midyan, Vayeshev Al Ha'Be'er, Lachaim Midyan Sheva Banot. So he came to me, ran away from Mitzrayim, came to Midyan, sat down by the well. First place he went to was the well. Got married. Well, we don't know how old his children were. Well, that's yeah. So again, it could be, you know, it's suggested that I mean, again, on the face of it, yeah, he had a little baby when he was heading back. But and, you know, Rashi suggests, why had he never done Mila yet? Because he was always worried he'd be summoned back to Mitzrayim, and didn't want to have to delay because he had an ill baby who just had Mila. So now he's got a son of 40. You're right. So there's a lot of ambiguity there, which presumably tells us that, what does ambiguity usually mean in Chumash? Yeah, it's unimportant. Nice conjecture, useful for droshas on a Shabbos morning. But, you know, beyond that, you know, it's unimportant to us. But certainly I think what the Sforno is perhaps implicitly suggesting is that Moshe Rabbeinu was selected because of his religious devotion. Rashi, on the other hand, says, Achara Mitpah, we saw Rashi, it's Rachik Min HaGezel. And I want to suggest, and I don't know if this is what Rashi had in mind or not, I want to suggest that maybe this means that actually why was Moshe Rabbeinu selected? Not because of his spiritual sensitivity, but because of his ethical sensitivity. Moshe Rabbeinu, he was Nitrachik Min HaGezel. That was something which bothered him very much. And the notion that Esher, maybe his sheep would graze in somebody else's field, that's what propelled him out of town, and that's what brought him to Har Sinai. So I think that's a thought. I don't want me to be accused again of Kiddush, but I think it's a worthwhile suggestion that maybe part of the dispute here isn't simply what took Moshe Rabbeinu to where, you know, to being where he was, but maybe part of the dispute is, or we could superimpose on that discussion, perhaps a suggestion as to why Moshe Rabbeinu was selected to be who he was, and, you know, giving it another option, you know, whether it was spiritual sensitivity, whether it was ethical sensitivity, or there's the famous Medrash that, you know, there was one of the sheep had run away, and he was running after it to look after it. So that's the Medrash which I brought here, which is, again, suggesting maybe a third dimension. Why was he selected? Because of his Rachmanut, his care and concern, which would make him a suitable leader for Am Yisrael. That's we really need to find a medrash that says he was there because he was thick-skinned, and that's what would have made him a suitable leader for Am Yisrael. So that's question number. What I've labelled question number one. Question number two: what's the symbolism of the bush and the fire? So without looking at the Mefarshim, what would our own suggestions be from a religious or literary perspective? What would we... Bush and fire. Kadosh Baruch Hu communicating from a bush and from fire.
Well, I'm not sure if it's literary or religious, but it's certainly startling. It's a startling thing to see, so it grabs the attention.
Yes, though one wonders a bit. There's that famous candid camera sketch, you know, where a person posts a letter and the postbox says thank you to him, and he was also startled. So, you know, actually that could have been a model as well. But you're right, it was startling.
It's a symbol of the Jewish people, isn't it? They're in slavery, they're being burnt, they're not being consumed.
So that is, yeah, that we will see in the Mepharshim as being one of the possibilities. It's the, that. What else? Anybody do English literature? No.
It's a contrasting image because it's instantly unnatural. Like, you have a situation where you have something that's living, something that is like trees and bushes have a simple association with life, with growth, and fire. And fire is a contrasted direction. It's an image of destruction, but also a force of power. And it's unusual because, in a sense, it's almost the destructive, the more powerful image is the fire is being contained within the more stable image, the more sort of settled, fixed, living image. So it's like, in some ways, like the fire is, it's an image almost of containment, like the fire is contained with or controlled by the bush. It's almost like the bush is, in some way, containing the fire.
Okay that's, the Mitziv makes a suggestion, actually, that, because it says, Blabates mitoch asneh. And he suggests that you've got this bush, and actually the fire was inside. We usually tend to think of it, again, with our cheder mindsets. I guess just because that's when we first encountered it, and I suppose the way that you first encounter it is the way that you remember it. Which, as an aside, would be very interesting to learn, you know, Chumash for the first time as a mature adult, you know, and see if you come up with... I wonder if such a person would have very different perspectives to us.
Ask again.
Yeah. I don't know, even, you know, some of them, the most famous stories, presumably, there's some awareness of, but yeah. Anyhow, so we have this vision of a bush with the flames all around it, but the bush not seeming to be consumed. The Nitziv suggests actually the fire was inside the bush. He could see inside there was the bush, there was a fire, which kept almost going out, but not going out. For me, that's as it may. What's the symbolism of this bush and fire? So let's look at Rashi. You know, let's look again at the classic Mepharshim.
Yeah,
Ashtat. Yeah. Aish and Torah is Aish. Sorry.
Is bush symbolizing anything? Like Aish and Torah?
Presumably. Right. That's what we've got to try and work out, what it was. I mean, again, it could be, I suppose, and the bush is an Eitz Chaim, and the fire, is the passion of Torah. In which case, this might simply be an image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, just sort of continually burning. If you want to Aish, presumably the Aish, something needs to be burning to provide Aish. You can't have fire without smoke. Sorry?
Fuel.
Yeah. You need some sort of fuel. So
and this is after all Hasinai, so it's an appropriate place for Torah to be.
I would thought so, yeah.
The problem with this explanation is that almost everything is compared to Torah.
Yes, Mayim, Yayin, Dvash. that might be an interesting discussion in Zohar. Everything is compared to Torah, yes. That's let's look at Rashi. So we talk asneh. V'lo ilan acher, not another type of tree. Mishum imo anochi v'tzara. So what Rashi's saying is, he said it was Davka, a bush, and the bush, as Ben suggested at the outset, and this isn't just a bush, but it's presumably a thorn bush, and suggesting the notion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's empathy with the plight of Am Yisrael, that they were clearly suffering. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I'm also there in that suffering with you. I'm also in that bush with you. So remember, because it's the Malach appears in the bush. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is suffering in a bush. And that's, again, the notion of Imam Anochi Vitzara is, it deserves wider attention. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, this image that you've seen at the bush, it's a sign for you. Not only am I sending you on this mission, but you will succeed in this mission. And you can trust me that I will save you. Just as you see the snare, the bush, is doing what I've demanded, and it's not being consumed, you will also, you'll go on my mission and you won't be harmed. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was worried about going back to Mitzrayim. Paro's going to off with your head, him. And therefore, because the prophet is telling him, don't worry, you can see that the bush isn't being harmed by the fire, so likewise you won't be harmed. So that's Rashi's interpretation. The Chizkuni gives slightly different suggestions. So the bush that's not being consumed, Ot Keneged Mitzrayim, Israel. It's a symbol of Mitzrayim and Israel. Ki ha'yevim shalaish, because the enemy is fire. So we've moved over from a Torah imagery to an enemy in imagery. Yisrael is snare, and Yisrael is compared to a snare. Why it's that, he doesn't say, we'll think about that in just a moment. Just as the fire couldn't burn up, consume the snare, likewise the enemy won't be able to wipe out Am Yisrael. So we've got the question, of course, why is Am Yisrael compared to a bush? What would be the comparison between Am Yisrael and a bush?
It's living, but it's fairly fragile.
If
it was a normal bush, it would just be burnt up.
Well, okay, that doesn't necessarily mean fragile.
Vulnerable.
Some Pharisees suggest lowly. But of course, we don't really know what a bush. I mean, we have lots of different bushes. That's what they call those Leylandii bushes. What are they called?
Leylandii.
Thank you. Leylandii bushes. Right? They're hardly low and inconsequential. Right. What other notions do we have? It's prickly, it's thorny, which might be a representation of the distress of the Egyptian oppression. The Kliyakar makes an interesting suggestion. He points out when you burn a bush, you hear lots of crackling and snapping and everything like that, suggesting that is reminiscent of Am Yisrael, that even when Am Yisrael is under attack, there's still tensions within Am Yisrael. Different factions are still arguing and fighting with each other. And that might be a symbolism.
The cries, we wanted to say it's the cries of Am Yisrael, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he can hear.
Okay, good kasher on the Kliyaka. Yeah. Or your Moslem Paro, says Rabbeinu Bechaya. So the wicked are compared to the thorns. Ubliyalka calls him on the Kulhem. So Hayabo Ebaish Hamakot. So this was the bush is Egypt, the fire is the plagues, Rausha Yichlem, really, it should be consumed. But it wasn't consumed. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hayam Amidobim or Fate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu retained it miraculously, the manner of Otz Moftav, in order to increase his wonders. So what we're seeing is, according to Rabbeinu, directly opposed views of the Chizkinu Rabbeinu Bechaya. One says that the bush is Am Yisrael, and that the fire is is Egypt, and the other says no, the bush is Egypt and the fire is Hashem.
If you know contextually within the whole precious and Shemot, that image of her makes sense.
In what sense?
Well, you have other images of fire and images of bushes in Chumash. You have the image of this, I mean, the bush is that the Akedah, where
right.
The animal is trapped. So you have this image of the bush sort of as a trapping device, and the other image of the fire is the Eish, which precedes Nesrael in the Midbar, which is, as it were, the Eish freed from the bush. So if you think of the containing thing, like looking back to the Akedah, and the Eish is then trapped within it, and then later when Israel is taken out of Nesrael, the bush is torn away from the bush, it's set free from the bush, and then it's, as it were, just
far out
there without the restriction of the
rush. Right. I mean, I think the notion of fire representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, this isn't the first time. I mean, I suppose the earliest time is with Kain the Hevel. So that's Midrashic. You know, but how do we know? You know, it says that Vayisha Hashem El Kain Vel Min Chato. You know, how do we know that he wanted Kain's, you know, offering? Vayisha, so Ratak and others say, a bolt of fire came down from the heavens and consumed the korban. We have Eish, as you say, the Bamut Eish Laila. We have, like with Gidon, Eish comes that came down, I think with Gidon, and also with Manoach, certainly.
Yeah.
There was Eliyahu also. So Eish, you know, certainly represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps the problem is the snare. That's not an imagery that we're entirely, you know, familiar with.
But I mean, it's a good suggestion, isn't it? That the snare at the time they came, it was something that was entrapping something else. So the Egyptians are entrapping the Jewish people, just as the bush entrapped the ram.
Definitely. That's okay. So, Ad Kan with the traditional interpretations. What I'd like to do is just turn over the page and look at a few interesting observations from Rabbeinu Bechaya, which are thought provoking. The first one is that he picks up on the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd. Now, I suspect that if any of us told our parents that we decided to make a career out of shepherding, they would feel that's not a job for a Jewish boy. Though Rabbeinu Bechaya points out that it was. The Avot were shepherds, Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd, David HaMelech was a shepherd. So, what was the attraction of shepherding? Why was it in those days, my son the shepherd?
Driving a taxi driver.
Depends where you come from, I guess. The very first Shiva visit I made when I was rabbi of Belmont, I went to visit Lady Sitting Shiva and we were talking, and I said something about, yeah, well, in Ilford there are taxi drivers. To which she said, my husband's also a taxi driver. That's, but there you have it. Achaz Moshe Rabbeinu Ha'umanot Hazeh, Kaminag at Tzadikim Arishonim. So Moshe Rabbein chose this career path as a shepherd, like earlier Tzadikim did. Kichem Matzinu beHevel at Tzadik. That's what Hevel did. Gam Bavot Olam, Gam Bishratim. V'Hanashim Roetzon. We learned last 2 weeks ago. V'Atam. What's the reason? Kadeshi Trachekim in Hayishuv, in order to be far away from the settlement. Shehu Alul Eitzel Hachet, which is being in town is going to lead you into temptation. V'od Kadeshi Bodeh Binavua. Also, in order to that you can be solitary and contemplative in communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Umasha Amar Achar HaMidbar, why it says that, you know, that he went beyond the wilderness, right far into it. He mentioned Katuv Shayam Moshe Mitrachek Min HaSadot. Teaches that Moshe kept far away from the Sadot, from the fields, because they should all read some of the Sadot, not very good, they're Gezer. Okay, that's the Rashi we saw. What issue is this Rabbeinu Bechaya raising? And he's not the only one. I think the Sforno says something similar. Well, I think this is being a very big issue that he's raising.
Well, as a leader, or potentially leader of Amistad, why should he go in solitude for such a long period of time?
Yeah.
Surely he should be with everyone else and leading them.
Yeah. The question of to what degree should the leader be integrated with the people, both, I suppose, in terms of pragmatism, to be a leader, is it better to be a leader if you're on the inside or on the outside, number one. Number two is the question, can you be effective if you don't really know what's going on? And Moshe Rabbeinu, he wanted to divorce himself from society. Is that what we want from our leaders? Thoughts, please.
Well, Hashem seems to want it because Moshe was always separate, even after, even in the Mishkan, even when he had Nevuah. I mean, he had to separate from his wife, not just other people. So he was. I suppose that's what being Kadosh is, was being separate and distant. I mean, Aaron was for the people and Moshe wasn't.
Okay, so does this mean for the most enhanced level of spirituality we have to be separate from society?
From Western
narrative,
sure.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Any other thoughts?
Well, a leader has an interaction with people he leads. And by definition, a leader can't be completely isolated.
Well, remember, when he came to lead, he led.
Yeah.
He did come back to the people, but
he speaks something from outside them. I mean, he's in some sense he's part of them because he's in a relationship with them at any rate. But on the other hand, he's not one of them because he's telling them what to do. They're following him. He's guiding them. He's there. He's giving them the vision. So the leader has to put in both camps.
I mean, it's one of these interesting questions. For example, in Rabbanut, what this is suggesting is that, whilst it's definitely true that when Moshe Rabbeinu was leader, he had to be part of the people, but to be able to be the leader, he needed to be separate from the people. That's one of the questions, is it best, should we train rabbis, send them off to, yeshiva, in the middle of nowhere for 20 years, or maybe even 40 years, let them not interact with society, let them gain all their knowledge in a vacuum, and then come to be leaders, or is it better that they should learn, do their learning in the community? That is a current question. I'll pause this for a moment.